This episode of the Justin Robert Young Podcast is brought to you by nobody but your own hopes and dreams. Because my name is indeed Justin Robert Young, and you are indeed listening to a podcast, folks. I'm back again, son of a paralegal, that one ninny in 10,000. Here to solve your problems, here to make you, it's not just to make you laugh, it's to make you think. Remember that. Remember that, folks, when you're listening to this here show. I got all sorts of things here on my mind, and you know, we got topics to beat the band. We got emails coming out of her yin yang. It's probably a racist connotation to that, but possibly racist email qualifiers aside, I feel like a pound and a half of hot dog shit. Like somebody went into Canner's Deli, a bizarre version of Canner's Deli, and said, I want a pound and a half of hot dog shit. And they said, fine. And they put it into a little plastic container and they handed it to a nice person with an odd request for lunch. I'm getting sick. I don't like getting sick. I refuse to admit I'm getting sick. And yet I find myself getting sick. I woke up today with a big sore throat. My nose has been firing out snot as if it were trying to win an award from the snot committee. I tend to go by the belief that if I refuse to admit that I am sick, we're going to work some mind over matter shit, and it just won't happen. This came from when I was, I'm not kidding when I say at the top of the show, I'm the son of a paralegal. I was the son of a paralegal living in San Diego, California, single mother, two kids. Guess how many times she would just stay home to take care of me and my brother? Zip, zero, zilch, nada. Stingy with the nada. Is how she would be described, Gloria Young. Because she can't just afford to stay home with her kids. No. She's got a job, man. She's got to have her kids fed. So she would always give us this ultimatum. You go to school. If you feel sick at lunch, then call and I'll come back. Unspoken yet implied part of that is if you're calling me in the middle of the day and you are not vomiting, it's going to be a problem because mama's got to pay the rent. The rent is too damn high and she needs to scratch that money together to make sure there's a roof over our heads. So a little sniffles, huh? A little avoid school, a little hooky. Not going to happen with Gloria Young. And that has stayed with me my entire life. I don't like to miss work. I don't like to not do things. Even when I'm sick, I like to do what I can. It is just who I am. And that might be viewed as healthy. What is unhealthy is me refusing to admit that I'm sick, which tends to be also me refusing to treat smaller symptoms that eventually turn into big symptoms. Last time I was sick, I had to go to the hospital. I woke up in the middle of the night, and I was shaking uncontrollably. I was in this room. This is back when this was not a studio. This was our bedroom. And I was maybe where I am sitting right now, except I was in a bed. Ashley freaking out, freaking her shit out. Throws me in the shower because I'm freezing. Turns on the water as hot as she can, so we can try to, I don't know, normalize my body temperature. And kind of works. I'm still shivering. Shivering. Also, I am scheduled to get on a flight from San Francisco to Washington, D.C. in 2 hours at the point that this is happening. Maybe 3 hours. So I make the decision, hey, listen, I can't just say, well, I'm sick, because there's a signed contract between the company that had hired the Go Game that I was assigned to. So I'm like, well, if I'm really too sick to go, I would need to go to the emergency room. So let's just go to the emergency room and let's just decide whether or not I am too sick to go out on this game. If I'm too sick to get on a plane. So we go to the emergency room and we check in. And we go over everything, and at this point I had stopped shivering, but I still felt like ass. And the doctor comes in, and he's like, all right, well, good news is it's just the flu. You just got hit by it really, really hard. So as long as you just stay off your feet, you'll be fine. Just take it easy a couple days. A lot of fluids. Normal flu shit. So I kind of make mention, well, you know, just asking, how dumb on a scale from one to the dumbest motherfucker who's walked the green earth that we stand on, how dumb would it be if I got on a plane to Washington, D.C.? And he said, really dumb. That's really stupid. Please don't do that. And I said, thank you, doc. That's all I needed to hear. I left the emergency room and I drove to SFO and I got on a flight to Washington, D.C. because I did not want that fucking flu to beat me. Yes, I just embodied the flu and I am railing against it. Yes, that is unhealthy. And it should never be looked at as a good or right thing to do, because I'm on that flight. And I take off, and taking off is okay. I'm trying to go to sleep. It's hard to go to sleep. I have a headache. It's really bad. Landing was the closest I've ever come to blacking out. My vision all went white. I was so congested that it just was a problem. It's a major problem. I then left Dulles, Washington Dulles. Made it there, and I went to go. I was sleeping. I was staying in the Jesuit house in Washington, D.C. Padre S.J. hooked me up to stay in the Jesuit house. And so I nursed myself back to health amongst the men of God. It was the closest that I have felt communing with the Christian All-Father. It was amazing. I sat in a simple Spartan Jesuit room while I slowly nursed myself back to health. It was a really, really a fun experience, if you don't count the fact that I almost blacked out, and it was really, really unsafe for me to be coughing while a bunch of other people were on that plane. Then on the way back, I was feeling better, but I was still very, very, very congested. So I'm on the flight, and all of a sudden, altitude changes, and I feel a bunch of pain in my cheeks. And in my teeth, like, I feel pain in, like, the roots of my teeth, to the point where I'm like, well, fuck, I got to go to a dentist because apparently I got a cavity or something. Like, this tooth is killing me. Till I thought, whoa, wait, hold on. I wonder if it's congestion. Maybe it's a congestion thing. So I get a towel, I blow my nose in it, and what comes out, dear listener to the Jury Podcast, I will swear to you, was a Technicolor soup that is beyond belief. It was as if it was Lisa Frank binder colors. It was spin art. I couldn't imagine what it was combining in my head and draining onto this towel. And then my tooth felt fine. I'm going to tell you how to never have a hangover. I'm going to tell you why you should never vote. I am going to tell you why writing letters is the worst thing you can ever do for yourself. Right after this.
It takes a lot to make a stew.
A pinch of salt and laughter too.
A scoop of kids to add the spice.
A dash of love to make it nice. And you've got
too many cooks.
Too many cooks.
Too many cooks.
I have a problem with letter writing. I have a problem with text stuff in general. How do I put this? All right. You should never express your true feelings via text. It's a full stop. It's a little lesson, a little life lesson. From Jury to you. And if you're thinking, well, okay, that doesn't make any sense because I have had a really, really, really important times in my life where I've poured my heart out in a letter or an email and I sent it to somebody. And that was good. And I felt good. It's a bad idea. It's a bad idea. If you want to feel good, you write that shit for yourself. You mail it to yourself. You give old fucking Jimbo the mailman quite a conundrum when you have your return and sending address the same motherfucking thing. He'll do a little fucking moonwalk and then put it right back in your box. That's what you should do with that, because we have to deal with the fact that our messages we send out, especially via text, especially via letters, are not going to be ingested the way they were written. I had a running argument with a friend of mine. Let's, just to obscure her identity, call her Rachel. Rachel loved writing letters. She would get into these relationships, things would kind of go sideways. All of a sudden, let me put all my feelings down in a letter and send it, or an email and send it. And that way, I just needed to get my thoughts out on the page so they could understand where I'm coming from. Never went well. Never, never, never. Because what you are writing, what you are putting down in your head is in a very specific tone of voice. It is in a very specific element of vulnerability. The person who reads that is almost guaranteed to not have that same tone of voice. In fact, if it is in a contentious situation, you are ensuring that they are reading that in the most aggressive tone of voice. In the most volatile tone of voice, in the most duplicitous tone of voice, in the most angry tone of voice. So why would you do that? Why would you want to portray your particular situation in the worst possible light? That's a question. That's a good question that you should ask yourself the next time you want to write a letter. The next time you want to put your true feelings down in an email. So what should you do, Justin? What should you do? I'm going to tell you. Text is, treat your emails to other people, especially in tough situations, relationship situations, tense business situations. They are news bulletins. Who, what, when, where, why. I need this from you. Can you please get it to me? Can you please show up at this time so we can go on our date? Please stop leaving your fucking socks in the living room. The headlines, that's all you need. You don't need to get into a big, well, you know, I feel like there's been a lot of other things that have been, Every email should be 20 words. If you have over 20 words to say, no email. And it should all have a beginning, a middle, and an end. In fact, that's why emails have headlines. They're news stories. They have headlines. Headline. I need you to meet me at a place. Boom. Not, you know, I really feel like you're not respecting my wishes when it comes to... news articles don't read like that. They don't read like President Barack Obama, who's been going through a lot lately. You know, he's the president, and meanwhile, the briefings didn't exactly go perfect yesterday. No, they get to the meat of it. President Obama met with Vladimir Putin. They talked about X, Y, Z. That's what every email should be. Your life will be better, and they will have no choice at the other end, in 10 situations, to read it in a very clear and concise tone of voice. If you write it to be read as clear and concise. And this comes back to this general overarching world theory that we've had on this show for weeks now. It's not about what you say. It's about what they hear. You can fashion in your head the thing that you think is going to be the best way to express yourself. And yet... if the person who you're trying to communicate to does not hear it like that, you have done fuck all good for your own cause. So think about it like that. It's not about what you write. It's about how they read it. And let me just tell you this. It's fucking really hard. Because you can write something very, very, very matter of fact. You can write something very, very, very... cut to the core, you can write what you think is just your honest expression. And you are reading it in this tone of voice. I feel that we have a communication breakdown and that you need to correct your pattern of behavior or else it will permanently affect our working relationship. That's reasonable, right? That's something you find in a government report. Now let's read that back in the way that they're reading it. Hey, dick, you're a real dick. And for those who are just listening on audio, I'm making a jerk-off motion. Because as soon as they read that you were fucking putting any kind of blame on them, they stopped reading. And they just fucking pictured you making the jerk-off motion over top of them while you made this sound. Do yourself a favor. Don't let them do that. Don't let them do that to you. We have so much more. So much more. I might be sick, but I'm bringing nuggets for y'all. Chicken McMotherfucking nuggets of truth. I'm going to tell you next segment how you can never have a hangover ever in your life. Well, you might have a little bit. Well, we'll get to it.
Too many cooks.
It takes a lot to make a stew,
especially when it's me and you,
and him and Steve from corporate too.
Too many cooks, it's true.
They say it goes, it'll spoil the broth.
Honey, I think that's not true.
Well, maybe too many cooks will spoil the broth.
I am joined by the one, the only, visiting from not Hotlanta, the Dirty Dirty. It is Cowgirl Curtis. Welcome, Cowgirl.
Hi.
We were having a conversation about about hangovers.
Yes.
We were talking about the there's easy ways, fun and easy lessons that you can learn and make yourself a better drinker. And let's look at it like that. We're not a bunch of school marms in bonnets running around telling you, you know, save room for Jesus. No, we're here to let you know that you can be a better drinker. And here's how. Cowgirl, you have prided yourself on not having a lot of hangovers, right?
Not since I learned how to drink properly.
Ah. So, yep. You hear a lot people saying, oh, you want to not have a hangover? Do a bunch of shit after you drink. Drink 2 aspirin and an orange juice. Stand on your head and recite the alphabet. Try to burp backwards. Like, there's a lot of random ass bullshit people tell you. Number one, that's all hoo-juju and malarkey as far as I'm concerned. None of that shit works. The fucking poison's already in your body. It's already kicking around. You're fucked no matter what. Okay? Okay, Chico? Fucking get that shit right the fuck out of here. Now let's move back in time. A lot of people say, oh, just drink water while you're drinking. And that's something that works fairly well.
Yep.
What would you say is the formula you need to follow?
What I do.
Yeah.
What I know works for me is I will have a beer or a drink or whatever, then have water.
Yeah.
And then have another drink. And then have water. And just end on water.
So you are alternating.
Yeah.
You are going one for one. Yeah. You got a drink, have a water. Got a drink, have a water. Got a drink, have a water. Now I'm going to give you a one-step solution beyond that. And this is foolproof. Like, that's binary. 1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1. Right? It's either one or the other.
Yep.
Here's another way. You want to prepare your shit? You want to make sure that you are walking in to the gladiatorial combat of sport drinking. Prepared. Do this. You're about to go out on a Friday. Fucking, you're going to go to happy hour. How about at 2:00? You start chugging water. Oh, shit. How do I know when I've drank enough water? I'll tell you when. When you're number one. As soon as that pee starts happening, when you're peeing all the time like you are when you're drunk, now you are hydrated to the max, bro. You are going to feel fucking amazing the next day. You can get pretty drunk. You can be out there fucking getting drunk, making mistakes, being a real silly goose, honking up and down the town. And yet, you will feel good because a hangover is dehydration. And if you hydrate your shit before, and you stick to the cowgirl Curtis plan of one for one, then you are going to be a excellent, excellent brunch companion the next day. Where? Because you fucking played the game the right way, you're going to be able to have yourself a little mimosa. Hey, there's a little thing. You can have yourself a little Bloody Mary. Huh?
I'll go for mimosas.
Maybe. All right. And let's get a little fucking crazy, huh? Let's mix in some grapefruit juice, that mimosa. Why not? Delicious. You can now begin to think of the artistic possibilities of drinking during breakfast because you were not the shithead who got so fucked up that his brain felt like it was splitting in half the next morning. That, my friends, is a little public service announcement from Cowgirl Curtis, Justin Robert Young, to you today.
Some people say it's spoiled. But that's not the American way.
Too
many cooks will serve a helping of freedom and resist the forces of evil.
Told you how to be a better drinker. Told you never to write letters. Here is my third piece of advice for you today. This is an advice-heavy version of The Jury Show. All right? Advice heavy. Don't vote. Don't vote. Don't do it. Do not vote. If you don't want to. There we go. That's the second part of that sentence. As important as the first part, don't vote if you do not feel you are informed enough to vote. Now, a lot of people probably voted. And a lot of people on Tuesday, this past Tuesday, probably right up your fucking piss hole saying, well, you gotta vote. Oh, you have one job to do today, and that's to vote. You don't. Here's another thing that they might say to you. Well, if you're gonna bitch, you gotta vote. That way, you had a say. That's the only way you can complain. Nope. Sorry, Grandpa. It's a fucking free speech country. I can talk all the shit I want about fucking anything I want. All right? So get out of my face with that bullshit. Here's why I say don't vote. Here's why I say don't vote. Because you want to know what? If you don't fucking have your shit together, then you are squandering somebody else who might have actually given a shit about stuff. Right? I have been out of town a lot in the last 6 months. I'm now a California voter. I'm an Oakland voter. I don't know ass about shit when it comes to my city. We had a mayoral election. I don't know who the fuck, what anybody stands for. I don't know the issues. I don't know fucking like, you know, the proposition for the rainy day fund so somebody can get a pastrami sandwich. I don't know. I don't know what it is. So I didn't vote. Now, does that make me a bad person? Because I would have otherwise walked into the voting booth uninformed and just jotted down a bunch of rando shit. I don't know. That's up to you. I don't think that it was the best thing I could do as an Oakland citizen to pollute the vote with something uninformed. Now, there's a lot of party partisans out there who will just say, oh, just vote your party. If you're a Democrat, just vote for the Democrats. If you're a Republican, just vote for the Republicans. And if that's your jam, then wing ding deedly ding dong do. Have a great time. But I think there's a lot of other people out there that might be a little bit more like me who are like, I don't trust either of these motherfucking parties because they're both jokester factories that were erected to completely put together a long string of jokesters. And I don't just trust them. I don't trust them as a brand name. These motherfuckers ain't Pixar. They're not Marvel Comics. I don't trust everything that fucking they pump out. So why am I going to vote for all of them no matter what? Okay. And so that's my thought about voting. I really just don't fucking believe that you need to vote. You can do whatever you want and people should stop getting really fucking annoyed by it. And they should stop pressuring people to say, vote, 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 vote. You gotta vote. If it's a reminder, hey, by the way, it's election day. Cool. It's election day. If you're into voting, get all up in that shit. But this fucking like, you gotta do it. It's a thing. Hey, just see the voting turnout. It shows that everybody's fucking terrible. Fuck that. If fucking 2% voted and they were really, really passionate about it, then good for them. And normally I'm one of them. I wasn't this time. And I don't feel that I should be made ashamed to say that I didn't vote. And I didn't vote for reasons of ignorance. I was ignorant on the topics. And I decided to sit it out. But that's only one part of my argument. For which I'm sure I'm going to get a million emails on, because this we can file this one under juries unpopular opinions. But here's my other thought. I hate the idea that voting is the primary change agent in our society. That, well, if you don't vote, you can't bitch. That, to me, insinuates that the way things get done is when these lizard people, weirdo sociopaths that we elect to every form of office say they get done, is how things change. And I very much don't believe it, which is why I wanted to go on this rant after the election as opposed to before. Because here is what I challenge to all of you. If you are politically motivated, then go change the world, not on election days. This is not about what they can do. It's about what you can do. It's about how you can change the world, because that's really how shit works. When you really look at voting, when you really look at societal and cultural change, it is only when a tidal wave is about to hit these fucking clowns that anything gets done. And by clowns, I mean politicians, not actual clowns, although they probably have the same amount of child rapists among them by percentage. Is that a little much? That might have been a little much. I might have crossed the line. Anyhow, if you feel passionate about if you feel passionate about women's rights, if you feel passionate about religious rights, if you feel passionate about net neutrality, these are the times to do it. When nobody else is, when there's no major campaign, when there's no huge issue, it's the persistent pressure that moves the world. It's not about getting your stoned roommate to go vote for the thing that you believe in and he has no fucking idea about. Because I get it. I wrote this on Twitter. I get that it makes sense for politicians to get the uninformed out to vote for them because they are in a popularity contest. Every political race you've ever seen, even the ones that were big and important and it said something about us and it meant a lot, is a popularity, is a bet between two or more people saying, yo, dog, I bet you I can get more people into a booth to press my button than yours. And everything that they say that goes from the beginning of that to the end of it is to get you, the voting public, into the booth to press their button. And they will say anything to do it. And they do. And they lie. And they over-exaggerate. And they make claims. And they make promises. And then what they're able to do, whatever. Their job is to stay elected. It's not to serve us. Their job is to keep their job. And very often, that means fuck all for the people who are really, really passionate about it. So if you're really passionate, then be passionate today. Be passionate the Tuesday after Election Day. Be passionate every Tuesday between now and the presidential election, and be passionate past then. Do something tomorrow that will further your cause, that isn't tied to a politician, that isn't tied to a political party, that makes the world better by way of your actions. That's what I ask of you. And also, I apologize to clowns. I'm sure that politicians have more child molesters amongst them. We have all kinds of emails coming right up into you right now. Natalie writes, most podcasts that I listen to handle the issue of Patreon and other crowdfunding gracefully. What is starting to drive me crazy or that some podcasts I listen to are starting to get so pushy about Patreons and Kickstarters and direct through PayPal bullshit that I feel alienated from the program. It feels like they are shaming their listeners who do not contribute, and that is what I take issue with. I don't care if you have several Patreons running at once. Brian has four, for example. What I do have a problem with is how some producers and content creators start to make those who cannot contribute feel like they are stealing their content that they themselves are releasing for free. As long as content creators remember that not everyone is in their listening audience are 30-somethings with disposable income to throw away, go ahead and promote your Patreon. Just don't make me feel like shit for not being able to contribute. I appreciate, though, that you, and many do, realize that not everybody can contribute. Trust me, I would love to help out some of my favorite shows, but at this point in my life, I just can't. And to be totally honest, the more someone makes a big fucking deal about having people contribute, the less I want to help them out. Some people can be dicks sometimes. That sounds like my favorite song in a musical never created. Some people can be dicks sometimes. Natalie, I totally agree. I had a conversation with somebody who will remain nameless, who had a conversation with somebody else who will remain nameless, but they do a very popular and profitable podcast. They are directly funded by their listeners. And what that person who did the very popular crowd-funded podcast told my friend was that it might make them feel a little dirty, but it is a tried and true method to goose contributions to get mad and shame their audience. That when they say, you know, I mean, I guess I just thought we were going to be able to make it work. You know, I guess I thought this was going to be able to be a thing. I guess it's not. So, I mean, sorry. I guess it's not. I guess we're not going to be able to do it with this kind of money. That is deliberately done. Number one, they're not really hurting. Number two, it's deliberately done to goose money coming in. And that it happens all the time. And that whenever they do it, they shame people into it. And as for all the Natalies who are pissed off about it, more people are like, no, money! I find that to be weird and gross. And it is weird shit that does weird shit during the day. I don't like it. I find it to me would be dishonest. But maybe I have a different relationship with you guys than this other guy has with his audience. He might view them differently. I mean, to shame and make my friends feel bad for money would be very weird for me. I would never do that until I do. And then I'll collect all the money. I won't do that. But I agree with you, Natalie. In my mind, it really is, just be honest, you know? Let them know that it's there. And I've never been steered wrong by being honest with the audience, with the people who are around you. The more you treat them like your friends, the better off my life has been. And I hope they continue to do that. Now, as for whether or not this show would have a Patreon, I mean, that would be, that'd be a thing, you know. All of a sudden, you know, we'd be able to take this kind of stuff to the next level. I was having some ideas the other day about, you know, maybe having a Patreon wherein we could increase the number of these shows. I mean, maybe it could be more often than just once a week. Nah, you guys would never go for it. Christopher writes, in the episode Tomception of the podcast that you guys used to do, you, Tom, and Brian played a game called Booze Confessionals, in which a story was told about you losing your virginity to your mom's sorority sister at the age of 23. When I heard a different story on this podcast, I was somewhat perplexed. I rewatched the episode and realized that Brian told the story for you. Not only that, but all the booze confessionals were answered by a different person, which makes me wonder if it was just an improv bit. The virginity... Okay, hold on. So there's more to this email. And I will... Let me just say that... That was not true. I have no memory of that bit. I have no memory of it, but I certainly did not. I don't think my mom was in a sorority. I know I did not lose my virginity at 23 to her sorority sister. So there's that. So just in case, we can all update my Wikipedia on when I lost my virginity. I was 18 years old in Syracuse, New York. So there. Please somebody update my Wikipedia. The virginity. All right, so we go back to the letter from Christopher. The virginity problem gave me some anxiety through my late teens and early 20s. I have always been a shy person, and it would take me a while to get to know somebody and feel comfortable. So throughout high school and college, I really hadn't dated anyone except for homecoming and prom. I would develop feelings for someone, but would feel too awkward to ever ask them on a date. I actually took some confidence from the story that Brian told. I figured that it wasn't as big of a deal as I had thought. I share much in common with you already, as an atheist, libertarian, skeptic. We even have the same birthday. Holy smokes. Anyway, my solution to the virginity problem was finding someone super compatible with me on OkCupid. Lot to unpack there. Number one, if you felt a kinship with me for losing my virginity at 23 to my mom's sorority sister, you, I'm glad that you are a stronger person for it. That particular story is not true. However, again, we've been talking about virginity on this show like it was the motherfucking 700 Club. We are virginity heavy when it comes to topics on this. And the song remains the same. Ease up, baby. It's all going to come to you. And besides, your problem's not virginity. Virginity is the symptom of your problem. In general, your problem is dealing with people, talking to people, and having your own self-confidence first and foremost. And also, fucking whatever. You know? No one's checking your dick for fucking rings like it was a tree, you know? Like, fucking whatever. You can, whatever. Lie and say that you lost your virginity at 23 to my mom's sorority sister. Happy birthday on March 5th. Gina writes, I'm dating somebody now who openly has admitted to being codependent, something that I struggle with. I know the obvious advice is that it feels too much like emphasis is being on the other person to make you feel happy, and that's unhealthy. I guess the advice I'm looking for is what is a new relationship warm and fuzzy, and what's a red flag for codependent trouble down the line? Here is your lesson. Just go ahead and listen to your inner Han Solo. Something happens in a relationship, and you get that, I got a bad feeling about this. Sometimes you're right. And many times early in the relationship, it's like I always used to have this thing. Everybody on the first day of school always loved all their teachers. You know, they were always like, oh, it's good that I got good teachers this year. But I always used to think of that one kind of fucked up thing that happened in that first day of class. Same thing in a relationship. Think of that one kind of fucked up thing that happened during that first date. Just file that away. Because a lot of times, that's just the pebble in the shoe that you don't realize is a problem until you walk longer in it. So, in terms of codependent stuff, if it's like, oh, I'm calling just because I want to hear your voice. Aw, that's a new relationship, warm and fuzzy. If it's, hey, I'm sorry I just called for the 9th time. I got a bad feeling about this. If you want to find this podcast, go on over to Stitcher, iTunes, or some other shit. Of course, you can always email me, justinrobertyoung@gmail.com. Make sure you put J-U-R-Y in the subject line. It's the only way I find the emails. So please help me out with that. Meanwhile, you can find me on Twitter and Instagram, Justin R. Young. And hook a brother up on the Snurp Chat, too. Snurp Chat me, Justin R. Young. Of course, you can always join the conversation, hashtag join the conversation, at diamondclub.reddit.com. Keep the party going with some of the topics that we talked about right here. If you want to be able to talk to other people, like-minded folks for whom listen to this show and say, hey, that jury's a fucking real moron, and let me lay out in a very clear and concise post why that's so, then go ahead on over there and do it. Everyone's been waiting for you. We don't know what's taking you so long. And that about wraps it up for this edition of the Jury Podcast. And ladies and gentlemen, let me tell you this. What do you say we if you find yourself in a dark place, if you find yourself being sexually advanced upon by your mom's sorority sister. If you find yourself not knowing who to vote for, too drunk to spell because of your hangover, if you find yourself writing a Dear John letter that will surely embarrass you as soon as it hits the person it is intended to, well then, friend, remember my voice as I tell you, please don't